This is a very special podcast today. You're going to hear some of the biggest, some of the best interviews that we have done, except when it's like Sophie's Choice. As I'm looking at each of the interviews, I'm like, oh, yeah, that was really good. But this one is really good. So this is one volume of about nine interviews that we've done in the last 6 months from the podcast that you just don't want
to
miss.
Yeah, and if you're a subscriber to this podcast, which you likely are if you're hearing our voice right now, these are the things that pop up on Saturdays. If you haven't listened to those, they're not normal shows. They're totally different, hour to an hour and a half long interviews that are just straight with no commercials, no breaks. And it's just long, in-depth conversations. And, you know, it's something that if you listen to, you know, the podcast because you want to hear the show every day, that's great. But you should check these out as well. They're fantastic, and
totally,
you can binge them.
Totally different. I just did one for this weekend, and the guest said, Glenn, nobody gives this. Nobody does 90 minutes of just non-confrontational, really deep intellectual conversation. And it's true. It's usually somebody I don't necessarily agree with, and they're powerful. So this today, highlights of.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
With the summer travel season almost here, I thought it was the perfect time to catch up on the Glenn Beck podcast episodes that you might have missed. They come out every Saturday. In recent months, I've had dozens of wide-ranging, long-form conversations with people on the front lines of culture, politics, education, and technology. I'm going to share portions of some of these vital conversations today, but you can find much more and the full conversations at glennbeck.com or wherever you download your podcasts. First, I want to jump into my conversation with financial expert and host of the Blaze TV's Economic War Room, Kevin Freeman.
We are now entering a time where there is an economic war on speech, on religion, on guns. And when I brought this up 3 years ago and said, this is how they're going to fight guns. They're going to fight it economically. They're going to go through the banks.
Right.
Don't worry about the Constitution. They'll go through the banks. They're doing that now with guns and speech and everything.
They'll go through Amendments 3, 4, 5, 6, but yeah. They're going after the Bill of Rights.
They are.
They are, for control. And so to your point on guns, there was something called Operation Choke Point. And recently, American Banker magazine, representing the American Banker Association, admitted, yes, Operation Choke Point was real. The FDIC really was encouraging banks to close accounts of gun sellers. It was illegal. And we have 900 pages of testimony that prove that it was illegal. So this,
when did that happen?
When the American Bankers Association say, or when did the Choke Point was under the Obama administration. And they literally, through the FDIC, they were encouraging. Because, all right, so you're a bank and you work with the FDIC. You just want to get through your review as quickly as possible. And the FDIC says, by the way, we think that those companies that sell guns, they're a little shady. It's going to make it a little harder for us to do the review if you're doing business with them. If you want to just stop doing business and close the accounts, you can do that. And so banks did. If you don't have a gun seller, if you don't have the ability to buy a gun from a reputable licensed dealer following the Second Amendment rights, how do you get a weapon legally?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you get it through a private transaction, which they're trying to ban. Mm-hmm. You get it through a gun show, which they're trying to ban. So this was a methodology, and it was purposed, and it was said in the American Banker article, it said they were doing it based on their partisan beliefs or based on their predetermined, what they thought was right and wrong, their moral beliefs. So that's Operation Choke Point. Now, about a year ago, Andrew Ross Sorkin, who is New York Times columnist, he is also the co-host of Squawk Box on CNBC. Every morning I see him and I see Joe Kernan. And Joe Kernan represents the conservative side and Andrew Ross Sorkin represents the pleasant progressive side.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very pleasant about it. And he always makes good arguments, even though I disagree almost.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote an article in the New York Times that said government will not be able to solve the gun problem. because we have this pesky Second Amendment. But you banks can do it. Mm-hmm. PayPal, you can do it. Mm-hmm. All of the finance companies have more power than government, and he's openly encouraged them to start canceling the PayPal accounts, the bank accounts, and so forth.
And it's not just with guns. They're now doing it to people in my business. They are silencing us one by one, and people are not seeing it.
You had Robert Spencer on a podcast here, mm-hmm. didn't you?
Yeah.
He was targeted.
I know he was.
He was targeted. It's not, you know, it's Alec Jones and Robert Spencer, and they're going systematically across anyone who's speaking something contrary to what we find mm-hmm. or deem acceptable. Mm-hmm. And you wonder, why are these people, why aren't they on the air? Why aren't, you know, why are they being silenced? Well, they aren't able to earn a living. They can't even get a bank account.
Well, we just saw a few weeks ago that the paperwork has now come out, and so now we actually know the numbers. But when we were saying Facebook is crushing conservatives, the algorithm was changed, and it changed the traffic by 70% to conservative websites. I mean, we, when the Germans rounded up the Jews, they put them in ghettos. You can live your Jewish life. You can do whatever you want. We're building a wall around you. Well, nobody saw them. Nobody heard them. They, no matter how loud they shouted, it just went into a brick wall around there, and then they could liquidate them. Aren't we doing that virtually?
We are. And we cover a lot of this in the economic war room. So by controlling and silencing people or changing the algorithms or the search results output, mm-hmm. I think it's Dr. Robert Epstein. He was published in USA Today. He said, I'm a Hillary Clinton supporter. I'm still a supporter today. But here's the fact. The page results produced by Google had the potential to swing the election, probably move independents by 10 points,
mm-hmm.
which means that had they not done that, I wonder what President Trump might have won by. I think that there are a lot of people who didn't vote for President Trump, but they voted against Hillary Clinton. And when you do surveys of Christians throughout the South and you're asking, why did you vote for this guy? Because he's got this bad history here and he's with this porn star and all this. Why did you vote for him? They always say, because she hates us. Mm-hmm. And everybody knew who the she hates us yeah. was. But they were silencing free speech, manipulating elections, and they're doing it with search results.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a silencing of free speech. And in my mind, it's election fraud.
It's nudge. It's nudge. It's what Cass Sunstein talked about. All you have to do is just nudge people. Just alter the search results just a little bit here and a little bit there, and all of a sudden you're on a different path. And that's what we're...
That's when you talked about before, don't we kind of commonly agree? Mm-hmm. And you said, don't we kind of... I think we commonly do, but they've been nudged more than maybe we've been nudged. And so there are people that may not be that far from us, but they've been nudged, and that dividing wall has been built between us.
When we look at the issue with guns, we see what's happening here, and people tend to forget Venezuelans had guns up until 2012. They took the guns from the citizens in 2012. That's when you can get away with literally murder. As we record this, Maduro is still in. He had just taken Jorge Ramos as a reporter and held him captive. Reports are showing that things are getting much, much worse there. Russia is now saying we're going to go to war in Venezuela. America is going to go to war in Venezuela. Nobody is reporting the fact that Chinese have a warship off the coast of Venezuela, right next to ours. What's happening in Venezuela, do you think?
Well, we've sent in aid, right? And the Western nations have sent in aid, and they shot people trying to get it.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing the natural result of a true socialist revolution. It looks good for a while, and everybody celebrated it, and you had Michael Moore and everybody come out and say, look at how good this is, and then you run out of other people's money. They nationalized stuff. Right. They ran out. I mean, it's the natural outcome of a socialist revolution. It has to always go to dictatorship, and it ends with the haves and the have-nots, the worst of which is where you have Hugo Chavez's daughter sporting around the world with $3 or $4 billion. Mm-hmm. How does a communist dictator's daughter inherit $3 to $4 billion?
How does a bus driver? A bus driver, that's what people loved about Maduro. He was one of the people. He was a bus driver. He wasn't rich. Now look at him. Yeah. Now look at him. They're flying bricks of gold that he claims are his out of the country. What happens? Let's start here. President wanted to build a wall, says it's a national emergency. It's no more of a national emergency today than it was 10 years ago. However, I think on the horizon, I don't know, are you following what's happening in Mexico with the oil pipelines and how they shut it down, and now gas lines are everywhere? They shut down the pipeline, said we're going to start trucking everything. Trucking it's not effective, at least the way, you know, going back to that. That's why they built that pipeline.
Yeah, it's a terribly inefficient way to move.
Horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
And there's a shortage of truck drivers in the West anyway.
Yeah.
So
you've got all these problems down in Mexico just from that one thing. You have a president who will not recognize anyone but Maduro. He's one of the few of Western countries that won't recognize him outside of Cuba. If he is instituting the policies that, you know, Chavez or Maduro were, it's already a thugocracy. Is it that hard for people to think maybe we would have a huge Colombian-style crisis on our hands, on our border?
You know, this is as they're on the precipice of potential economic greatness as a nation, because the Mexican people are phenomenal, smart, hardworking people, and China is collapsing as the low-cost producer. We have an agreement with Mexico. They could be the next producer, manufacturer, or whatever for the United States, the wages and so forth. They're on the precipice of this, and yet they have, from the thugocracy, from the drug cartel control, from the fact that we don't have a wall and we have porous and open borders. I mean, if we had a wall, Mexico would benefit because the drug cartels mm-hmm. wouldn't get the massive amounts of money. Mm-hmm. They're on the precipice of something really great if they could get their act together. That's where we are at so many areas of life.
So many.
Is that it could be really great or really terrible.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks. Here's a piece of my conversation with Peter Schweizer.
I did a show recently on the difference between disinformation and misinformation.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating topic.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you explain the difference between the two? I mean, disinformation is when it is planted into what you think is a credible source.
Right.
Okay. If it comes from Pravda, you're like, oh, it's Pravda. Okay.
Right.
But if it comes from the New York Times,
right,
then it's disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, Google is engaged, and Facebook, knowingly or not, in a disinformation campaign.
I think that you could certainly classify that. And I think the issue becomes, why are they doing this and how are they doing this? You asked earlier about Zuckerberg and your interaction with him. I don't know that Mark Zuckerberg, I'm not suggesting that Mark Zuckerberg is sitting around saying, how can we deal with conservatives on Facebook?
I don't think so either.
But the problem is there are lots of people employed by Facebook who maybe they're in their mid-20s. Maybe they were woke on campus, yeah. And they are now involved in the news feed. I mean, we had a Facebook employee who was involved with their trending section that came out a couple of years ago, who said, "Oh yeah, we sunk conservative stories and we boosted liberal stories." So I don't think it's a question of the executives of these companies, in kind of a James Bond villain moment, saying, "Here's how we're going to rule the universe." I think it's a question of they've created these powerful companies and they've created a culture within these companies that, for all the talk of tolerance, is actually very intolerant.
Very much.
And it reflects in the product that they are producing.
So did you touch on at all? I have a document from a meeting with Media Matters on Inauguration Day. It was a meeting that happened with far left donors with Media Matters on the election day in Florida. Oh, not on election day, on Inauguration Day. And they said, "Here's where we went wrong, and here's what we're going to do." And it talks in that document about how they are going to go to Facebook and Google, and they are going to advise.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And in that document, it says, "We have already been given access to all of the raw data in real time."
Yeah.
Peter, I don't think they'd give that to me or any organization that I know of.
No, they would not. They would not. And this is the problem. I mean, the problem is the way that they are trying to deal with this is we're being criticized by conservatives, so we'll go meet with conservatives. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, by the way. I think that's a good thing. But that's not really the issue. The issue is not, saying nice words. The fundamental issue comes down to, what is this company doing? And the whole debate now that's arisen about fake news, I think, is a huge problem, because it's allowing essentially these liberal groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center and Media Matters to essentially say to Facebook and Google, no, we want you to engage in more censorship.
Right.
We want you to classify.
And the Facebook would respond, "Well, but we have others. We have, I don't remember if it's Heritage Foundation, but we have others that are doing it on the right. I don't want either side.
That's exactly.
I don't want either side shut up."
Yeah. It's the problem that develops is that nasty word, cronyism. And cronyism is a problem where you give concentrated power or you give special access or favors to certain people, and invariably it's going to be misused. And this is really the question, I guess, Glenn, is does Facebook and does Google so much distrust the American people that they believe the American people are incapable of looking at a news story and saying, "That's totally yes, I'm not buying that." And they don't. They don't have confidence in the American people to do that. They feel like they have to somehow be the arbitrators, and they don't.
So here's, let's be clear. Just a new study came out. Goldfish have an attention span of 9 seconds. Americans have 7 seconds. Okay. So let's be very clear. We're not doing our job.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And that has changed dramatically because of Facebook and all of the interaction that we do.
Yep.
However, because I was just asked this question, don't they have a responsibility? Shouldn't they be? No, they have a responsibility to be transparent and be a platform.
Correct.
A platform.
Correct.
I don't believe that you should censor anyone on a platform.
Right.
It's the battlefield of ideas. To say that now, what people will say is, "Well, that's crazy, because there's a lot of crazy people." Yeah, there are. There are.
Yeah.
Thomas Jefferson said, "Believe the people. Trust the people."
Right.
Okay. The key to that sentence was, comma, "They will usually get it wrong, but eventually they'll get it right."
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So we're going through this period right now. The worst thing we can do is put a babysitter on top of us forever.
Yes.
We have to learn fire is hot.
Yes. No, you're exactly right. And this is further evidence that I think they don't really understand the dynamics at work in the country today. The dynamic at work in the country today is a rejection of sort of this elite view of how society should be organized. It's one of the reasons why you have in financial markets, conservatives, people on the left don't trust the large banks. They don't trust Wall Street. It's a rejection of that. It's the same reason conservatives, liberals, independents have a distrust of Washington, D.C. It's not because they want tax policy to be slightly different. It's they don't fundamentally trust them to reflect their interests and to look out for them. And they also know that elites generally look down upon them. So, you know, that it, my challenge to Silicon Valley is for all their talk of egalitarianism, for all their talk about we love democracy and everybody having a voice, do you really? Do you really? I mean, the point is, we all remember as a kid, I grew up outside of Seattle, Washington, and I remember going down to a place called Pioneer Square. You probably went there too.
Yep.
There were all kinds of people wandering around saying strange things. Well, those people today may have blog sites, and they're going to say some crazy stuff. I didn't pay a lot of attention back then. I'm not paying a lot of attention now, and I have enough trust that most people aren't going to pay a lot of attention to them. And that's, I think, what we have to embrace, because otherwise it's we are going to have intellectual policemen that are trying to tell people, here's what you should think. Here's what you should not think. Not only that, but please don't even look in this direction. You can't even look in this direction. If you look in this direction, it might somehow infect you. It's ridiculous. The battlefield of ideas is such that the best ideas win. And I happen to believe that the ideas of the American founding were the best ideas. And they are going to win. And we ought to be confident in that.
And the kind of monitoring and everything else, honestly, goes against almost every single article in the Bill of Rights.
That's right.
Almost every single one is violated. Now, it's not violated by the government.
Right.
But it is the same principle, especially the bigger they get.
Yes. And that, by the way, goes on to what you were saying earlier about Huxley and Orwell. You know, the traditional view is the government was going to use technology to control our lives.
Yeah.
It's really corporations now.
I've always made fun of, you know, Blade Runner, the corporation. Please shut up about the corporation. It's the government. No.
Right, right.
No, we are now entering the time where the liberal concern about corporations
right.
is actually accurate now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's weird that they're so in love with Apple and Google because yeah. these are the guys you've been warning
yeah.
us about.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So let me take you kind of to that Orwell place. Mm-hmm. But first, explain Gmail is free. Google searches are free.
Right, right. They are free, but they come at a high price.
No, I'm not paying anything.
Well, you're not paying anything in terms of monetary. That's true. They're free. But the question is, what is going on? Because all these servers, all this capacity is expensive. So what Google is doing is they have a product here. You're not buying it. You are the product.
They're selling you.
You're selling you, and they're selling all kinds of secrets about you. And Gmail is a perfect example of this. I used Gmail up until I started on this project, and now I don't use Gmail anymore. And what people have to realize about Gmail is they're scanning every email that comes in. They're scanning it. They know what's in it. They are scanning every email that you send out. And if you draft an email, you know, you're upset with your cousin about something. You had a, you know, debate over Thanksgiving and you thought they were rude. And you said, you know, cousin Chris, I think you're rude and you're terrible and you're this and that. And you say, you know what? That's really kind of nasty. I shouldn't send it. That draft, they're scanning that draft.
I want to make it clear. You're not saying the draft that you save and put into drafts.
Correct.
It's the keystrokes.
Correct.
It's recording the keystrokes.
That's correct.
Even if you delete all of it,
that's
it's
correct.
Still there.
Yeah.
All right. What's important here is, again, to distinguish, when you say they're scanning, it doesn't mean they're reading it.
Correct.
Okay? And why are they scanning it?
Well, they're scanning it because let's say you send an email to your friend. Golly, I'm really tired of work. I'd sure love to be on a beach in Mexico right now. They're scanning it because they're scanning. They're looking for beach in Mexico, and you are going to probably see ads on your Google feed for apartments or condos in Mexico.
And lo and behold, the next morning, someday you wake up and they say, Mr. Schweitzer, I've already booked two tickets.
That's right.
Would you like to go to Mexico today? I know you're tired and you've been thinking about it.
Right. That's right. And that's where it's headed. And and again, there are certain amazing conveniences that come with this. I mean, you know, you use Google Maps. There are all sorts of great benefits to that, to Google search. The thing that people have to keep in mind, though, is it's not a one-way street. It's not just these wonderful good things they're doing for you. It's the capacity they are developing to do things to you. So when I say that they're scanning your Gmails, it's not that there's a person sitting in Silicon Valley saying, oh, look what Glenn just sent in Gmail.
Correct.
But they have the capacity to do that.
Yes.
And they have the capacity, if they don't like what you're doing, to shut you off from Gmail. And Dr. Jordan Peterson, we highlight him in the film. That's exactly what happened to him. He's a psychology professor at the University of Toronto, and he took a position against compelled speech, where there was a debate in Toronto about an ordinance that would require you to address somebody by their preferred gender. Peterson's position was, I always address people by their preferred gender, but this is compelled speech. You should not force people to do this. He took this public position. The next day, Glenn, he was shut out of his Gmail account. He was shut out of his YouTube account. Everything Google owned was shut down. Now, you would think, why is this going on? I think probably what happened is somebody connected with Google, maybe mid-level, saw this, you know, is maybe in favor of this policy position and sort of in a juvenile way said, I don't like this guy. We're going to sort of cut him off. But Jordan Peterson lost his Gmail. He lost his Google calendar. The point being, you rely on these products, it's going to give them an enormous capacity over your life. And if they choose to, sometimes in an arbitrary way, they may just shut you out because they don't like a position that you've taken. And the problem is Google does not have a customer service department you can call to say, why did this happen? They have no customer service department. And they make clear, we can choose to do this to you anytime we want.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and you're listening to the Glenn Beck program. If you like what you're hearing on this show, make sure you check out Pat Gray Unleashed. It's available wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Back before customers at coffee shops got their information from actually talking to a person sitting across the table from them, rather than ignoring them while scrolling through their Twitter mentions, things were a lot simpler. There was wisdom in a good conversation. A friend, a family member, or a pastor was usually the first to be consulted when advice was needed. I thought we needed to get back to a little bit of that. My podcast, available at glenbeck.com or wherever you get your podcast, is a good mixture of modern-day technology and old-fashioned communication. One-on-one, thoughtful, and practical application that you can actually use. My recent conversation was with Phil Robertson, and it goes right to the heart of this concept. Here's a small portion.
As things become more and more insane in our world, I thought of the poster that that Churchill put out in the Second World War. Keep calm and carry on. Right now, none of us are keeping calm. We're all freaking out. All we have to do is keep calm and then do the things that you know are right. Just pay no attention to that. Just keep calm and carry on.
You're quoting some great scriptures. Look, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, offer your body as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. Offer your body. That's 24/7. Which is your spiritual worship. Don't conform any longer to the pattern of the world. You just mentioned the pattern of the world, Beck.
It's insane.
If someone had told me that we would end up by 2020 with the mischief and the sinful, the murder,
the
murder
lies,
their own
lies.
Children. They shoot up churches, concert. You're like, what? Jesus said, the devil is the father of lies. Just look at the news media and what they keep coming out of their mouth. And you're like, and the scary part is, I think they believe the lie.
You too.
And so it's not just the news media. It's the...
Jesus said the devil is behind the whole thing.
Yeah, it's advertising. Think of the lies of, to sell somebody a product, I have to tell you you're not complete without this. That's the biggest lie there is.
I know it. That's why I haven't gotten into the cell phone and computer business. I'm on the computer, but I never. Look, there's different gifts. Here's worship. Love must be sincere 24/7. Hate what is evil, cling to what's good all the time, 24/7. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love all the time. Honor one another above yourselves all the time. Don't be lagging in zeal. Keep your spiritual fervor, serving the Lord all the time. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction. My prostate acted up here about 2 or 3 weeks ago. You say, did you go down on the ground? I asked the Almighty to take it from me. It took about a week or 10 days. I actually went to see a doctor for the first time in 50 years. You say, patient in affliction. The last time I've been in the hospital is when a tick bit me and gave me rabbit fever. You say, you haven't been back to a doctor since. But I went the other day because the old prostate got to acting up. You're like, was it rough? Was it rough? So look, patient in affliction, I weathered it, faithful in prayer, share with God's people who are in need, practice hospitality, have them over for a meal, bless those who persecute you. That's why I told you, I don't curse them. Bless them, they're all right. Bless and don't curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice, mourn with those who mourn, live in harmony with one another, don't be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position, the poor, the downtrodden, whether rednecks, whatever. Don't be conceited. Don't repay anyone evil for evil. This is worship. This is how we worship. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. You're like, be careful to do what is right no matter who's looking. Do what is right. Be careful to do what's right. Heathen or not. Do what's right before them. Let them see that. If it's possible, which is amazing, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. I live in a redneck neighborhood. You say, you try to live at peace with them. Yep. They were stealing my fish. The rednecks, back when I was fishing to survive, before the duck call took off. I had a lot of nets in the river, hoop nets. Catfish go in them. Buffalo, you get 30 cents a pound. Catfish, you get 70. Add all these nets out. Add floats on them. You could see them. Everyone around there knew they were my nets. I would notice that I'd hear an outboard. Well, I trained myself to get it, go down there right quick and looking through the bushes. And I'm looking over there. And every once in a while, some of these guys would pull up on one of those floats and they'd start coming up with it. They're going to steal my fish. What I did at first, I was young in the faith. I took a shotgun with buckshot and I tore out there and I would threaten them, scare the daylights out of them. What are you doing stealing from me? But they kept stealing. I'd run that bunch off and 3 weeks later, there's another bunch. I read this text that where I'm reading now. Don't take revenge, my friends. Leave room for God's wrath. It's written, it's mine to avenge. I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. I said, young in the faith, I said, that won't work. These rednecks, if I'm good to them, if I give them what they're trying to steal, you're telling me, Lord, they'll quit stealing? I said, that won't work. But it occurred to me, Beck, I said, how would I know? I've never tried it. I'm just trying to spook them.
Mm-hmm.
And these are dangerous people anyway.
Of course, you're in the South. You eat Yankees.
Yeah. So I said, well, I'm going to try that, Lord. I'm going to test you right here on this. Mm-hmm. So the next bunch I catch, I tear out there with my motor. I have my gun just in case my faith gets a little weak. But it's not in my hands. It's in the bottom of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
I pull out there. These guys look around, and they're dropping my net in the river, acting like they were fishing. I said, guys, looks like you've had trouble catching some fish, and you decided to get mine in my nets. I said, good times have come your way. I'm going to give you the fish. And they're looking at me, and the look on their faces, they looked at each other. I said, I'm going to give you what you... I want you to have a fish fry. How many are coming? They said, let's see, there was my cousin. And I said, you know, you start frying fish, people are coming out of the woodwork, ten folks you haven't seen in years. I said, listen, I'm going to keep your boat right there. I said, calm down now. I'm not going to hurt you. I said, I'm going to give you what you would try. Let's see what you've fixed to catch. Well, I pulled the net up, had a lot of fish in it. I put them in my boat. I put the net back out. I said, bring your boat over here. They said, no, so we're just going down. I said, come on over here. They were scared of me. But they were thinking, wait a minute, we're stealing from him. He's given us what we were trying to steal. He's crazy. So look, they get their boat over, and I start throwing fish over in their boat. I said, when you think you have enough for the fish fry, you can say so. And they told me one time, well, I think that'd be enough, Mr. Rogers. I said, no, let me give you a few more. So I threw them some more. I said, now, you have what you wanted to steal. I'm giving you what you were trying to steal. I said, I do this for a living. This is how I make money. I said, I would appreciate it if you didn't steal from me. I said, now listen, I live, see up there on a hill, that house on that hill? Yeah. I said, the next time you want a fish fry, if you can't catch any fish, just come see me, and I'll give them to you. All the way up and down the river for years after that, they all quit stealing from me. What I didn't know was, young in the faith, I appealed to their conscience, if they had one, and I wanted them to say, good night, the guy would give them to us. I mean, the old guy gave us the fish we was trying to steal. Can you believe that? Well, once that goes around in the redneck circles, they say, we send food with that old dude. That's a good old dude. God was right all along. I just never had, I was too weak to see it.
So I will tell you, I read the scriptures, and I find answers to everything that you're doing, just like you did with the fish.
Yep.
I find answers everywhere in it. And it's amazing, because every time I try it, it works too. Is there a problem with people of faith in America today, because they profess they believe it, but then they don't do it? They, you know, the answer is, these are not enemies of yours, they're enemies of mine. I have the right for vengeance. You don't.
That
you, I am commanding you to love them.
Remember, we're not wrestling against flesh and blood.
Correct.
That's humans. That's not
right.
Where the battle is.
Correct.
But we're wrestling with the rulers of this age, the authorities, the
princes
evil
of Darga, the princes
of darkness, the
air.
Spiritual wickedness.
Yeah.
You say, our battle is with the evil one. That's why when I wrote that book, it says the theft of America's soul, I'm putting it on the evil one. The humans are just caught up in it.
Correct.
But if they're delivered from Satan, they're ready to go. But he's the problem.
So where are all the Christians that don't want to, that will say, I you know what, I have plenty. Let me give you my fish. Just don't steal from me. They would say, and I mean this for everybody, but I'm hearing it from Christians. But I know everybody is this way. They would say, that is weakness. That will show weakness. They're going to steal from you blind if you do that. You can't do that. You got to show power, and you got to stand up.
Yeah, yeah. Let me show you another thing on where they would do the same thing. Be angry, but sin not. Okay, so someone sins against you and you're angry. You're good. Anger is a healthy emotion. However,
vengeance is not.
That's right. Be angry, but don't sin. You're like, well, how could I be angry and not sin? Well, if you lash back out verbally, they curse you, you start cursing them, and then you have a, and it escalates. So we both are cursing each other. You know, good, you know, two neighbors, one mowing the grass, one on the other side of the fence, and they're sitting there cursing each other. You're like, you can't lash back physically. You're sinning. You have to keep your mouth shut. You don't pick up something either and begin to beat them half to death with it or pull out your pistol and shoot them. Be angry, but don't sin. Okay, they sinned against you. You don't retaliate verbally. You don't retaliate physically. You just walk away. However, a lot of times when you walk away, you didn't sin, not yet, but you're bitter because they cursed you. You're like, they've still got their talons on you. They're still causing you harm. They're still controlling you because you're bitter about taking the cursing for no reason. You say, well, what's the way out of that mess? What's the strong person to do? Just forgive them. Don't be bitter. Don't lash out verbally. Don't lash out physically. Just forgive them and move on. You say, it looked, who's the stronger person? The one that can't take a cursing without cursing back? That's weak. You say, pick up something because somebody cursed you and you're going to beat them after death. You say, that's weak. You're bitter for the next 20 years over what someone, you're like, they've controlled your life for 20 years. You're still mad about what they did back.
Mm-hmm.
You see it all the time. Or just forgive them and move on. You say, forgive them. That's where, there's the strong person. So we just get it out of whack.
I'm talking to Phil Robertson, the granddaddy of Duck Dynasty. Phil breaks it down as only Phil can break it down.
So I think forgiveness is the, I think that's the first step. I think the deeper step of it is profound empathy. I know I've been in situations where I've had to forgive and I could forgive. And then I've been in situations that I've prayed a lot about that I knew I was going to have problems with.
Yep.
And my whole heart felt their pain. And all of a sudden, no matter what they said to me, I could just feel how much pain they were in.
Yep.
And it brings you to tears, and that's even more when you can to say I forgive you and mean it is hard.
Yep.
To feel the
very difficult
other
for
pain.
Human beings. Oof. Very difficult for human beings to get that. That's why the greatest commands in the Bible, love God and love your neighbor, you say, in spite of the mistakes. How many times, Lord, should we forgive? Seven? He said, 70 times seven. 70 times seven. They're like, 70 times seven. If Glenn Beck and Phil Robertson added up every violation where they broke God's, one of his laws, if we added them all up, you say, there would be probably thousands. That's why Jesus said, you be forgiven to them 70 times seven. Be ready to forgive. Look how many sins I've forgiven of you. So if you look at it like that, you say, whoa, what's this? Leave no debt remain outstanding. Let no debt remain outstanding. Pay your bills. Except one debt we owe, Beck. The continuing debt to love one another. For he who loves his fellow man, watch how this works, has fulfilled the law with all the don't do this, don't do that, don't lie, don't steal, don't curse, don't. You're like, how do you fulfill that? Love your neighbor. Watch. The commandments: do not commit adultery, do not murder, do not steal, do not covet, and whatever other commandment there may be are summed up in this one rule. love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to its neighbor. You're like, I don't get up in the morning and say, I got to make sure that I don't steal somebody's, you know, money out of their billfold, or I got to make sure that, you know, that I don't have any evil thoughts, and I got to make sure that I'm, you know, I don't lash out at that. Just love them.
Mm-hmm.
Just love them. If you love them, you're certainly not going to shoot them. If you love them, you say, you're not going to be unkind to them. If you love them, you're not going to mess with their woman. You love them too much. She's your sister. She's a fellow human being. You say, love would take care of every bit of that. But boy, is that a hard lesson.
It's a hard one.
To get every episode of the Glenn Beck Podcast, just subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you download your podcast.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.